You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Coming to you from Classic City,
the capital of the Bulldog Nation.
It's time for another edition of the podcast designed for the most die-hard Georgia fans in the country.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the Glory UGA podcast brought to you by our great friends at MyBookie. The college basketball postseason is in full swing. The NCAA tournament is less than a week away. It truly is now or never. If you're going to get in on this promo deal, it's so simple, guys. Go to mybookie.ag. If you're looking to get on the action, use our promo code UGA if you're signing up for a brand new account, and they're going to give you that 50% bonus on top of your first deposit, extra money for you guys to play with. So again, jump on it while you can. Mybookie.ag, promo code UGA. Hey, all right, guys, I am your host, Tyler, and I know that we have been very football heavy over the past couple of weeks in the lead up to spring practice, and I have thoroughly enjoyed every second of it. Talking football, talking Georgia football specifically, is my happy place. So yes, I have had a hell of a time over the past couple of weeks breaking down spring practice from every possible angle. But today on the show, we're going to veer away from spring practice for one episode. We'll get right back on it Monday with a full recap of week one of spring practice. But today, I want to take a look at this Georgia baseball team ahead of the SEC opener this weekend on the road in Lexington against the Kentucky Wildcats. The Diamond Dogs are 17-1, guys. 17-1. And you know what? A start like that deserves some love here on this podcast. So today, this is going to be kind of a Georgia baseball reset. I know a lot of you have been paying very close attention to the team all the way going back to the beginning of the season a couple of weeks back, but I also know a lot of you probably haven't been paying that close attention, maybe just cursory attention here and there, seeing some things on social media. So what I'm going to do today, my main goal is to get you guys up to date with what's going on with this team. How did we get to 17-1? What do we do well? What do we struggle at? What are the causes for optimism heading into conference play? What are the causes for concern heading into conference play? And from a big picture standpoint, I want to try to answer one question. Is this Georgia baseball team for real? Because we've gotten off to some solid starts, some pretty good starts over the past couple of years, only to fade down the stretch. I mean, last year we did not get off to a 17-1 start, but we were 13-4 heading into conference play. So starting off 17-1 in non-con play, that's amazing. That's almost as good as you can possibly start off. But is that going to translate and carry over into conference play when we have four series against teams currently ranked inside the college baseball top 10 and six series against teams ranked in the top 25 coming up over the next 10 weekends? As good as the SEC is in college football, it's better in college baseball, guys. It is a man's world out there. It is a true murderer's row of teams, and we've got a hellacious schedule in front of us. So are we for real, or is this 17-1 start more of a mirage? We'll dive into that. But first, I know I said we're talking baseball today. We are. That's going to be the main thrust of today's show. But I do want to start off with a few quick minutes of football talk because it has come to my attention that I am, well, let's just be real. I am an idiot. I've kind of always known that, but it was further driven home to me today. It was reinforced when I had a couple people reach out and say, hey man, I really love the depth chart preview episode. That was a lot of fun. Appreciate you doing that. But hey, did I just miss it, or did you not talk about the tight ends on that show? And I went back and looked at it. I was like, yep, I just totally skipped over them. I'm looking at my notes right here. I have tight ends in my notes. I guess I just got excited going through it, which I did. I mean, talking Georgia football, guys, this time of year, I get excited about it, and I got a little too excited and just skipped over the tight end. So I do quickly just want to run through that. I went through every other position and gave you my two deep projection, but I did skip over tight end. So let's run through that real quick. Now, we did have some news with Pierce Spurlin, with Kirby announcing that Pierce Spurlin is having to take a medical disqualification due to a heart condition, which is that's really, really tough for that kid, man. I really hate that for him. But it does tighten up the numbers in the tight end room. And it also sheds a little bit more light on the transfer of Stanford tight end Benjamin Jurosik, or former Stanford tight end Benjamin Jurosik, to our team, who'll be here in May. So that makes a little bit more sense now when you think about Pierce Spurlin not being with the program anymore, or being with the program but no longer being able to play. So the two deep at tight end, to me, it's a three-man battle here. Jaden Riddell, the true freshman, is going to be really, really good. I'm very high on him long-term. I just don't think he's ready right now. Maybe I'm wrong. He is good. He's really, really talented. He's a big physical guy, really good athlete, strong, strong hands. Like, he is a like contested ball machine. But to me, it's really a three-man battle right now between Oscar Delp, Lawson Lucky, who are both on campus going through spring drills right now, and then Benjamin Jurosik, who will be here for the summer beginning in May once he graduates from Stanford. Oscar Delp is a guy that's going to be a starter on this team. Like, he's going to start at the inline tight end role, which is the same role that he played last year. I'm very confident in saying that. So really, to me, it's almost like a two-man battle between Lawson Lucky and Jurosik at that mover tight end role that Brock's filled the past couple of years. So this is a huge spring for Lawson Lucky. He had a big spring as a freshman last year, as a guy who was fresh on campus. That guy broke out during the spring. I mean, he was the talk of the town throughout really all of spring practice last year. Also got off to a fast start during fall camp, which you kind of expect him to build off of coming off of spring practice. But he did get injured in the middle of fall camp and was out for the first couple weeks of the season. That certainly set him back. But he got more playing time as the season progressed. Certainly with Brock Bowers going down with the high ankle sprain, he got some time there. Played a little bit more later in the year. And I fully expect him to take a big step as a sophomore. But this spring is huge for him, because Jurosik is not coming to play around, guys. That dude is the real deal. I've said this on the show a couple of times over the past couple of weeks, but I'll say it again for any of you who might have missed it. There are only three tight ends over the past 3 years in all of college football that have produced more yards than Benjamin Jurosik. Only three. Brock Bowers is one of them, the greatest tight end in the history of college football. Michael Mayer, a first-round draft pick out of Notre Dame. And Dalton Kincaid, who is starting for the Buffalo Bills right now. That is the list. That is it. And Jurosik, oh, by the way, has also missed. He missed half of last year with an injury, missed some of the previous year with an injury. So if it wasn't for injury, who knows where his numbers would be. And he did that with a very, very bad quarterback situation at Stanford over the past couple of years. This guy is the real deal. I've been telling you guys that for, a month and a half since he committed. He is the real deal. And I know we love Lawson Lucky. I love Lawson Lucky. I want the best for Lawson Lucky, but I also want the best for Georgia. And I'm right now going to project Benjamin Jurosik to be the guy to open the season week one against Clemson in Mercedes-Benz Stadium as our starter at that mover tight end role. Now, he might not open the game out there on the field because we might be in 11 personnel. Who knows? But when we are in 12 personnel, right now, my projection is going to be Oscar Delp at the inline tight end role and Benjamin Jurosik at the mover tight end role. He has the experience. He has the proven production at the college level. He's certainly not Brock Bowers, but you can do a lot of the same things that you did with Brock with Jurosik. You can say the same thing about Lawson Lucky, sure. And maybe Lawson does start over him. Like, I'm not saying that Lawson has no chance. He's a really talented tight end. But I'm going to defer to the guy who has multiple years of experience, has been one of the most productive tight ends in the entire country over the past 3 years, and is a natural fit at that mover tight end role. He is not an inline guy. Like, blocking is not going to be his forte. Brock was much better in that regard than Jurosik is going to be. Jurosik's not physical in the way that Brock was. That's the one big separating factor between those two. But in terms of like athleticism, hands, contested catchability, body control, athleticism, elusiveness in space, yards after catchability, all those things, he is similar in some ways to Brock Bowers. Just not quite to that level, but he's got that skill set. I would say that Lucky is probably going to be a better blocker than him, so Lawson has that going for him. But with that mover tight end role, you have to be able to block. Yes, you have to be able to do that functionally. But really, more than anything, you are there to be a threat in the pass game. And I just simply think Jurosik is more of a threat in the pass game right now than Lawson Lucky is. But look, Lawson is going to have his opportunity this spring to really, really make his case and make it really difficult for the coaches to keep him off the field. Riddell, in my opinion, could probably play both, but what I'm being told behind the scenes, this guy is, he's put on some, like he was already big coming into Athens, but he's gotten even bigger, stronger. So I think he might be slated for more of the inline tight end role, which I thought Pierce Spurlin was. So without Spurlin there, we have to have someone to back up Oscar Delp. And Lucky can play that role too. Lawson can certainly play that role. So maybe it's, you know, if anybody goes down, Lawson Lucky's going to be the plug and play guy, the first guy off the bench. But Riddell right now, if I had to have a two deep, I would say Lucky's going to be behind Urosik. There might be a rotation. I think both going to play. And I would put Riddell behind Delp at that inline tight end role. So yeah, there you go, guys. I left that off the episode last night. My bad. Sometimes when you're recording a podcast, you just get in the groove, man. You just get going and, like, you know, you lose your mind, which is exactly what happened last night. But I do think that now covered. I think that's every single position. But if some way, somehow I missed something else, let me know, guys. And I'll come back on here and we'll cover that next week. So yeah, again, my bad. All right. So we're going to get to some baseball talk, but I guess this is a really good spot right now. Just take our first break. I'm going to remind you guys one more time about our wonderful friends at MyBookie. I don't know about you guys, but I have been watching wall-to-wall college basketball over the past couple of days. Obviously, I love the NCAA tournament, but I also love this conference tournament weekend too, man. This is a lot of fun. In some ways, it might be even more exciting than the NCAA tournament because you have more games and there are teams truly fighting for their lives. I mean, I guess it's not quite the level of the NCAA tournament, but it's not that far off. I don't know. I love it. I eat this stuff up. And if you're like me and you want to make these next couple weekends even more exciting, go ahead and sign up for a brand new account at MyBookie, guys. I'm telling you, it is going to take you maybe 60 seconds. If you're good with a computer, it might take you 30 seconds. It ain't going to take you long at all. All you have to do is go to mybookie.ag, use our promo code UGA when you sign up for a brand new account, and they are going to give you that 50% bonus on top of your first deposit. We've been talking about it for months, but this deal, guys, it is running out of time. You've got roughly 2 weeks left through the end of the college basketball season to get in on this action. You want to go ahead, get started now, build that bankroll up, win big, and who knows, you can go ahead and cash it out if you want to, but maybe hold it over, roll it over to college football season, and be able to go crazy during college football season with a big bankroll. Obviously, you got to bet responsibly, but it's great fun, guys. It's a lot of fun, so jump in on it while you can. Again, it's mybookie.ag. Use our promo code UGA, and then you will be ready to bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with MyBookie.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, guys, let's talk some Georgia baseball. I'm actually excited about this. I have had a lot of fun over the past month or so following this Georgia baseball team, the 17-1 start that they have gotten off to. And it's not just the 17-1 start, guys. That's great enough. That's exciting enough. But it's the way that we are winning these games. We are absolutely hitting the cover off of the baseball. We are destroying teams. So for those of you who have not been following this baseball team as closely as I have, maybe some others out there have, the baseball diehards, but now you kind of want to get in on it because we're 17-1. Looks like we might actually have a real team here. When trying to explain to you why we have been so good and how we have gotten off to this 17-1 start, it would be a crime to start anywhere but with the Georgia offense. This offense is not just one of the best in the SEC. It is truly one of the best in the entire country. I'm going to read some numbers off to you right now, okay? We are first in the SEC and first nationally in slugging percentage. We are first in the SEC and third nationally in on-base percentage. We are first in the SEC with 52 home runs. We also lead the nation with 52 home runs. Get this, guys. We hit 101 home runs total last year, and that was over the course of 56 games. We have already hit more than half of that total through 18 games. Y'all know I'm not a math guy, but according to my math, that puts us on pace for 160 home runs this season, which if we would have hit that total last year, we would have led the SEC in home runs by 14 home runs. We are first in the SEC in total bases. We are second in hits. We're only 2 hits behind Tennessee. They got 201. We've got 199. We're third in the SEC in batting average at 320. Tennessee's number 2. We're 1 percentage point behind them. Tennessee's hitting 321 as a team. We're hitting 320. So we're right there at the top. We're second in the SEC in runs scored with 194. Again, Tennessee's got 196. So we are right there knocking on the door of being tops in the SEC in that category. And then we're also first in the SEC in RBIs with 183. You starting to get the picture here? Yeah, we are killing the baseball, but it doesn't stop there. In 6 of our 17 wins, we have run-ruled our opponent. In more than a third of our wins so far this year, we have run-ruled our opponent. You heard that right. More than a third of our wins, we have run-ruled our opponent. And yeah, like if you're going to run-rule an opponent, you got to pitch well because you got to keep their scoring down. But you also have to be able to hit the baseball. And that is what we are doing. We have scored 10 or more runs in 13 of our 18 games. Last year, guys, we scored 10 or more runs in 14 games total. This lineup is a pitcher's worst nightmare, and there's really not a weak spot in the lineup. We hit the ball well up and down the lineup 1 through 9. There are legitimately no easy outs. But while the lineup as a whole has been incredibly strong, we are obviously led by what I believe is very clearly the best hitter in the entire country. He might well be the best overall player, but he's certainly the best hitter in the country, and that, of course, is Charlie Condon, who set an SEC freshman record for home runs last year, and he has picked up right where he left off and even elevated his game to another level. The dude has 13 home runs already this year through 18 games, which, yeah, you guessed it, that leads the country. He also leads the country in batting average, hitting .569. The next closest player in the country is hitting .540, nearly 30 percentage points behind Charlie. He also leads the nation in slugging and on-base percentage. So when I say that Charlie Condon is clearly the best hitter in the country, that is not an exercise in hyperbole. That is the truth. This guy strikes fear into the heart of every opposing pitcher, every opposing manager, every opposing pitching coach. We are at the point now where if there is an open base, more often than not, they are putting him on. They are walking him. And it's not just that he's hitting home runs. He's hitting home runs, guys, and he's slugging out of this world. But it's the way he's doing it. He crushes the baseball. His exit velocity is major league level stuff. Like the bat speed is absolutely ridiculous. His exit velo on a double a couple weeks ago was like 117. And if you're not like a hardcore baseball guy and you don't really get the exit velo thing, let me give you a reference here. Ronald Acuna Jr., Atlanta Braves, right? Reigning National League MVP. He had the highest exit velocity last year, at least recorded exit velocity last year, at 121.2. There were only 8 hitters last year that hit a ball with an exit velocity greater than what Charlie Condon hit earlier this year. The guy is making baseballs weep. It's at the point where it's can't miss stuff. Like, I get upset with myself if I miss a single at-bat. We are talking about an all-time great Georgia baseball player right now. I'm not quite yet ready to say he's better than Gordon Beckham, but give it a couple of weeks, couple of months, and maybe I'll go there. I mean, I'm really close right now, guys. I'm really close. And if you want to make the argument that he is better than Gordon Beckham already, I'll listen to it, and I really won't put up much of a fight. But if you look at back at Gordon Beckham's final year, that year that we had that run the College World Series, and God, we lost to Fresno State. Should have won that one. That one hurts. But if you look back that final year, Beckham hit 28 homers, had 77 RBIs that year, hit 411. Now, Condon's on pace to beat those numbers. He's not going to beat the RBI numbers. He's sitting in the two slot right now. We want to have him a little higher in the lineup to make sure he can get as many at-bats as possible. So he only has 26 RBI right now. But, I mean, he's still kind of on pace for about a third of the way through the season. He could surpass that 77 RBI number, especially if he gets on a roll here in conference play. It's possible. He's probably going to break Beckham's home runs. Like, he's gonna surpass 28. I'd be honestly surprised at this point if he does not. Could he hit better than 411? Yeah, probably. I mean, he hit 386 last year, which was second in the SEC, only behind Dylan Cruz from LSU. And right now, yeah, he's hitting 569. So, yeah, 411 is certainly within striking distance. But in fairness to Gordon Beckham, he did do that through the entirety of an SEC slate and through the postseason and the College World Series. So there's certainly a chance that Charlie Kahn is going to do that. And honestly, right now, it's probably likely that he puts up a better overall season than what Gordon Beckham did back in 2008. Again, I would be honestly shocked at this point if he doesn't surpass the 28 homers that Beckham hit back in 2008. So yeah, I'm really close. I'm really close right now to saying, yes, he is better than Gordon Beckham, but let's give it another month or so once we get into conference play and see what happens. But I'm certainly open to that conversation. But at the very least, right now, in college baseball, I don't know who a better baseball player is. He is 100% a Golden Spikes Award candidate. If you guys aren't familiar with the Golden Spikes Award is, that is the baseball equivalent of the Heisman Trophy. In fact, right now, I'd say he has to be the favorite. It's very early in the season. Again, we're not even in conference play yet. We're almost in conference play. We're not quite there yet. So it's very, very early, but if what we've seen so far is any indication of what he's going to do in conference play, I mean, his numbers are going to come down to earth a little bit. Obviously, that's going to happen. But, I mean, if we keep winning and he keeps playing the way he's playing, it's going to be tough for anyone to beat him out for that award. So, yes, obviously, Charlie Condon has been incredible. We all knew he would be good coming to the year, but to be frank with you, he's exceeded even my very lofty expectations for him. He has been out of this world. Out of control good is what Charlie Condon has been. It's insane right now. But as good as Condon has been, he hasn't done it alone. He's not knocking in all of those runs alone. We have a bunch of other good hitters around him. We have actually three guys right now hitting over 400. Yes, Condon hitting 569. Well, we've got Paul Tate hitting 417. He's one of our mini transfers. We actually got him from the Big Ten. We got him from Purdue. He's actually come on really hot of late. He's hitting 417. Sebastian Murillo, who did not open the season as a starter. He was essentially our everyday starter at second base last year, but we got a lot of transfer guys, and we've been moving guys around, giving a bunch of guys opportunities to see who can produce and who fits best where. But Murillo has come on late and really kind of earned a number of starts. He's playing more third base right now, but his bat's been really hot of late. He's hitting 407, which I got to be honest, that's a little bit of a surprise for me. He hit well for us last year, but he wasn't hitting at this level. Now, again, getting into conference play, he will probably come down to earth a little bit, and he doesn't have the volume of at-bats that some of the other guys do because he wasn't starting to open the season. He's only got 27 at-bats right now, but hey, he has made the most of those opportunities of late, and he's really, really carving out a role for himself on this team and earning more playing time, earning more starts. So he's been really good. So yeah, we've got three guys hitting over 400. We've got eight guys hitting over 300. Fernando Gonzalez has been a very pleasant surprise. Fernando has been with us for a while. He's been our starting catcher for a couple years now. And he's been a really, really good defensive catcher for us. And he's been fine-ish, serviceable-ish at the plate, but never a major threat. He's always been hitting around like the 7-8 hole. He's hitting 378 right now, guys. He's hitting really, really well. In fact, he's moved all the way up in the lineup. He's hitting the cleanup role right now, guys. That's where Fernando Gonzalez is hitting. He's got four home runs. He's hitting the ball really, really well, not just for average. He's hitting the ball with some power. As a freshman, he hit 254. As a sophomore in 2022, he hit 258. And last year, he was all the way down to 232. But this year, as a senior, this guy has been unbelievable at the plate for us. Now, again, like all these other guys, he'll come down to earth a little bit when we get into conference play, but he's hitting the ball, even in non-conference play, better than he has at any point in his career, and he has moved up that lineup, deservedly so. We got freshman Trey Phelps, who's going to be a hell of a baseball player for us, guys. He's hitting 346 right now, got a couple of homers. He hasn't started a ton of games, but when he's got opportunities, he has made the most of them. And those two home runs, I know it's only two home runs right now, but both those home runs were absolute moonshots. And then Henry Hunter has been another really nice surprise. To be quite honest with you guys, he was a guy I didn't think was going to get a ton of playing time. He's a catcher. We already have Fernando Gonzalez. Corey Collins has played some catcher. Logan Jordan's a guy that hit the ball really well last year who also plays catcher. He started playing a lot early in the season. Logan Jordan did, but his opportunities have really cut down of late, and you've seen Henry Hunter get a lot more opportunities. This guy is from Grayson. He was at UAB last year, another one of these transfers. He's only a junior, so he's not one of the grad transfers that we've got. We've got a bunch of those in the team. But last year at UAB, he only hit 166, had three home runs total for the year. But he's already got three home runs this year, non-conference play, and he's hitting 333. And he hasn't really even gotten that many at-bats. He's only got 24 at-bats. So he's really become that second catcher behind Fernando Gonzalez, and he's also freeing us up to use Nando as a DH at times. Slade Alford's another guy who I thought could have a really good year. He's a guy that did not play very well for Mississippi State last year. He hit a little over 200. He was just a little over the Mendoza line last year at Mississippi State, transferred over here. He's a big physical guy. He's an infielder. He can play second, he can play third. He opened as a third baseman, he's playing more second base right now, but he's hitting 369. He's got seven homers on the season. He's second on the team in homers behind Charlie Condon, and he's got himself 25 RBIs to Condon's 26. Slade Alford is actually hitting leadoff, so we got Alford and Condon as a 1-2 punch at the 1 and 2 slots in our lineup, which is interesting because both those guys, you would think they're more traditional 3 and 4 hole guys because they are your power hitters. You're going to drive runs in. But we like those guys at the top of the lineup. I think for a couple of reasons. I believe that we have confidence in our guys down the lineup to get on base. And we should. We have one of the highest on base percentages in the entire country. Get those guys on base at the table. And then you turn the lineup over and you've got Slade Alford and Charlie Condon, 1 and 2. That's a nightmare for a pitcher. And again, having Alford and Condon, 1 and 2, as opposed to like 3 and 4, you get to them quicker in the lineup. So if you're late in the game, you don't want to end a game with one of those guys on deck. You want those guys to get back up and get as many at-bats as you possibly can. So I love having them at 1 and 2. Now, what you lose is you lose a little bit of speed, right? Those guys are not going to steal any bases, and they're not going to put pressure on pitchers that way. That's just not what they're going to do. They're not going to be like even Ben Anderson, who didn't steal a ton of bags for us last year, but was capable, a very good athlete. And that's a big reason why we are dead last in the SEC in stolen bases. Like, we are not even trying to run the bases. We're trying to get guys on base. We do a really good job of not chasing. That's a really big thing for Wes Johns. You hear him talk about in all of his interviews, throw strikes on the mound and don't chase at the plate. So we get guys on base, and then we have this group of bashers that just kill the baseball and drive it out of the park. That's how we're scoring runs. And it has been incredibly effective. Now, will it be as effective when we get into conference play and the competition ramps up and we see better pitchers? We'll see. Sometimes when you get into conference play, you need to be able to play small ball. And we haven't really, I'm not saying that we can't do that. We haven't shown the ability to do it because we haven't had a need to do it. But to be quite honest with you guys, of course, yes, everybody's numbers are going to come down to earth to a degree once we get into conference play and the competition ramps up. But I have seen nothing to suggest that this lineup is just going to stop hitting. We are never out of a game with this lineup. That's the thing. Like, even if one of our starters or some of our guys out of the pen get roughed up, we're never out of it, man. We're never out of it because we can hit our way back into it with one swing. I mean, we had a stretch of games about a week and a half ago. We hit four straight games with grand slams. I think it was 5 grand slams in 4 games. Just wild, wild stuff. I mean, things I have never seen from a Georgia baseball team. Now, look, I know that Georgia baseball hasn't been great for a while, and I know that, you know, the rank and file Georgia fan doesn't pay all that much attention, because why would you? We haven't been great. But I do pay attention. I pay attention to these things. I'm a Georgia guy. I love all Georgia sports, so I've been into it for a long time, and I've watched Georgia baseball very closely for a long time, and I have not seen anything like what we are doing offensively in, I don't know, 20 years. And again, that is a big part of why this start to the season has been so fun. Yeah, it's fun just to win. That's fun enough, 17-1. But to win the way that we are winning, to kill the baseball, put up a ton of runs, and just destroy teams, that makes it even more fun. So yes, the offense has been the key to this team, to this 17-1 start. But they haven't done it alone. We've had some good pitching, and when we get back from this final break, I'm going to detail what we've done on the mound through the first 18 games of the year. But I do want to remind you about our friends at Alumni Hall. Speaking of Georgia baseball, the Diamond Dogs are killing it, guys. So you want to get out and support them this year. I've been out a couple of times. It's so much fun to be out there at Foley Field. The weather's getting really nice. Bring the family. It's a cheap outing for the family. Everyone's going to love it. And when you come to a game, you've got to look the part, right? You want to support the guys. So go to Alumni Hall and pick up the latest Georgia baseball gear. I'm telling you, they have more Georgia baseball gear than anyone out there. They have the replica jerseys in every possible color. They've got white, they've got black, they've got red, they've even got gray. And yes, your boy has them in every color. I keep telling you guys, I can't help myself. I'm not lying. I can't help myself. I go in there and I got to get something because it just catches my eye. And it's like, I have to have this. I have to have this. And I spend way, way, way too much money in there. But hey, it is what it is. We're Georgia fans. That's what we do. So pick up your Georgia baseball gear at Alumni Hall today. You can stop by in store on your way into Athens for a game inside the Epps Bridge Shopping Center or online at alumnihall.com because Alumni Hall is where the Bulldogs shop.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face-Off launches April 9th.
All right, guys, let's talk about this pitching staff. This is a staff that has not been dominant, but I think has some potential. I like what I've seen. Largely, I like what I've seen. So let's go with the starters off the top here. Our Friday starter all season to this point has been senior Charlie Goldstein, and he's been fantastic for us. Now, the competition hasn't been great. Sure, we'll get to that a little bit later when we talk about is this team for real, but it doesn't matter. Whoever he's faced, Goldstein has been really good. He's got a 1.29 ERA right now. Teams are hitting 149 against him. He's got 3 starts. He's got 18 strikeouts to 8 walks. He's been clearly our number one ace pitcher. He started the season that way, and he has shown why. He has been that guy every time out. He's been fantastic. Is he a dominant power pitcher? No, he's not that guy, but I mean, he's the guy that's going to go out there and give us a chance to win every Friday night. His location has really, really improved. He does a really good job of keeping hitters off balance. They really don't square the ball up often against him. Teams don't really actually hit him hard. I know they're only hitting 149, but when they do connect with the ball, they're not really driving it anywhere. So I love what I've seen from him. Leighton Finley, who's a sophomore, got a start last year, pitched primarily out of the bullpen. It was up and down last year, because you could see this stuff. But he opened the season as our Sunday starter, and he's kind of in that role right now. His ERA is at 2.45. Teams are hitting 2.41 against him. Now, he's a guy that teams have squared up a little bit more. They have hit him pretty hard at times. He's given up a couple home runs and a couple like big moonshot home runs. But one thing I've been really encouraged by when it comes to Finley is his control. Last year, that was a problem, not just for him, but really our entire pitching staff. And it's been a problem for our staff this year, too. It's carried over this year. It certainly has. Hasn't improved all that much. But Finley's only walked 2 batters this year. And that's a significant improvement for him. So if you're going to give up home runs, that's fine. Just don't walk guys and have guys on base, give them free passes, and let them have 2-3-run home runs because you're walking guys and putting them on base. So yeah, he's been solid. He's got 4 starts. He's been good for us. And he's a guy that's still very much rounding into form. His best baseball is very, very much ahead of him. Having Wes Johnson here, a longtime pitching coach, now as our head coach, I think that's doing wonders for Leighton Finley. And I think it's going to continue to do wonders for Leighton Finley. I think he's going to be a better pitcher by the time we get to the end of this season. Now, of course, yes, the hitters he's going to be facing are going to be much better than the ones he's faced at this point. But I do think he is also going to be a better pitcher when we get later into the season. He's also a guy I think has a little bit more in his fastball. He can get more in his fastball. Right now, he's throwing like in the low 90s. Sometimes he can touch the mid-90s at times, but not really consistently. But he's a big dude. I mean, Leighton Finley is 6'5", 235. He has the ability to be a power pitcher. I think he's got more juice on his fastball than what he's thrown up there consistently. And I hope that we can start to find that and get him to throw a little bit harder on a more consistent basis, because I think that he can. I think he's capable. He's just not doing it consistently right now. And then this third weekend starter has been kind of intriguing lately. Okay, so Christian Maracna, who's a transfer, who's a guy that has been a career bullpen guy, he is the guy that opened as our Saturday starter. But over the past 2 weeks, he's been throwing as the midweek starter. And Jarvis Evans, who was a midweek starter earlier in the year, is now pitching on the weekend. So I don't know if that's going to be permanent, It seems like that's the plan heading into conference play. Jarvis Evans, like Leighton Finley, is a sophomore that has a high level of potential. He got a couple of starts last year. He looked good in those starts, but obviously was trying to learn how to do it at the college level. And he's looked really good so far this year. He's another big pitcher. He's got an ERA right at 2. Teams are only hitting 136 against him. He has 4 starts. Last couple weekends, he has been a weekend starter. 22 strikeouts to 14 walks. He's got to cut down the walks. He's got this stuff. Like he's got some put-out pitches. But he's got to get more consistent with his location. You cannot continue to put batters on like that. Because when you get into SEC play and you face more prolific hitters, if you start walking guys, somebody's going to hit a 2 or 3-run jack, maybe a grand slam off you, and it's going to change a game. He's got to cut down on those walks. But if he can do that, Jarvis Evans is going to be a heck of a pitcher for us. I mean, he's already pitching really well. If he can cut down on the walks, the free passes, this guy's going to be a really good SEC pitcher. And then Maracna, he's a guy, yeah, started the season as a weekend starter. Now he seems like he's kind of sliding into that midweek role, but he's been good for us. And he doesn't pitch deep into games. Again, he's a career bullpen guy. He pitches about 3-4-ish innings at most right now, but his ERA is at 2.35. Teams only hitting 173 against him. He does have 5 starts, 21 strikeouts, 10 walks. He's been really good for us. This is a guy that Wes Johnson was talking up in the preseason. I was like, I'm kind of skeptical here because this guy has been coming out of the pen his entire career, and you're talking him up as a starter. Okay, let's see. I trust you. You're a career pitching coach, so you know far more about this than I do, but I need to see it. And I've seen it from Rackton. Again, he's not going deep into games right now. None of these guys really have. I mean, I guess you can say Goldstein's gone 5 innings a couple times, but we've been kind of building them up to conference play where we're going to have them go 5, 6, 7 innings deeper into games. We haven't had them go that deep into games at this point because we haven't really had to. We want to give other guys opportunities to see what we have and see how guys respond in different situations. But Maracna has been really good in that starter role, whether it's been on the weekend or in the midweek. Now, the other guy I think has starter potential. He hasn't started a game this year. He kind of opened the season as the long reliever behind Maracna. So Maracna would go like 3 innings, then Colton Smith, who's another sophomore pitcher. Yeah, we had a good trio of pitchers come in last year. He would come in and pitch another, 3, 4, 5 innings after Maracna. And he's pitched really well at times. Now, he's given up a couple jacks. He's given up too many home runs, and that's what's hurt him. So his ERA is at 4.05 right now. Team's running 2.50 against him, but he's another guy that has really good stuff. He might have, I don't know, I think him and Evans might have long-term the best stuff on the team and the highest ceilings, but he gets, like, some teams will square this guy up and just hit rocket shots off him. But he's got some put-out pitches. Again, 16 strikeouts, only 4 walks. His control has been good. He's thrown 13 innings on the year. Hasn't pitched over the past week and a half or so, so I don't know if there's an injury situation or anything there. I haven't heard anything. Hopefully we're just resting the guy. We've seen enough of him, and we know what we have for him, and we're just trying to get him ready for conference play because he has been good for us, largely speaking, when he's gotten opportunities. So those are the guys that have kind of been either the starters or, like, co-starters with Colton Smith. I know Colton Smith hasn't started a game, but like it's kind of been the plan seems like when Maracna was pitching on the weekends, Maracna and then Colton Smith for 4 or 5 innings, kind of a tandem there. So I have actually been very pleased with our starting pitching. I think our staff has been really good for the most part through the first couple weekends of the season. Now the bullpen, a lot like last year, it concerns me. I just got to be real with you guys. It concerns me. I think we have better arms back there. I think we have more options. I think we guys that have done it more at this level and have more proven production, but they've also been giving up some runs to some not very good teams at times and been getting hit hard at times. Now look, we have thrown a bunch of different guys, and it's starting to seem like we have a couple of guys that we're going to trust going into SEC play, which is what I've been looking for. Like, who are the guys that we're going to trust? Because we're throwing a bunch of guys out there. We're trying to give guys opportunities, see who's going to rise to the top, but there are a couple of guys that are getting more play than others. They're seeing more innings, more appearances. And I think they're the guys that we're going to lean on out of the pen once we get an SEC play again starting this weekend on the road in Lexington against Kentucky. Brian Zeldin looks like he's going to be the closer. Now, Wes Johnson will tell you, he said this a couple times in interviews, that we don't really have a true closer. We're going to do like a closer by committee thing. But when we've had opportunities to close games and we haven't had a ton because we're typically just killing teams, Zeldin has been that guy. He leads the team with 3 saves. He's been really, really good at the pen. He's been like the best reliever by far. His ERA is at 1.23. Teams are only hitting 0.87 against him. He's given up 2 hits, guys. 2 hits in 7 1/3 innings. He's definitely been our best reliever, and I think he's clearly, even if Wes Johnson won't admit it, he seems to clearly be our closer. Like when we need to close the game and we need to close the door on a team, it's going to be Zeldin. It's been that. It's been him so far this season. I don't see why that would change. Now, there's a couple other guys that have also seen quite a bit of playing time as well. A transfer from Charleston Southern, Daniel, I always struggle saying his last name, Patasak, I want to say. He's got 5 appearances, 7 2/3 innings pitched. He's got a 4.7 ERA. Team's hitting .267 against him. He's given up 3 home runs. Teams are really hitting this guy pretty well. I think he's got pretty good stuff, but he just leaves the ball hanging sometimes, and it's just like throwing batting practice at times. It's like, uh-oh, not good. But he has been pitching a little bit better of late, so I think he's going to be a middle reliever for us. Joshua Barish, another guy that we seem to like. We throw him out there a lot, but he's also getting hit really well right now. He's got 6 appearances, 9 2/3 innings, which is the most of any of our relievers not named Colton Smith. And Colton Smith, again, is like a co-ish starter kind of guy. But Robert, a transfer from Southern New Hampshire, his ERA is 5.59 right now, guys. And that's through non-comp play. And, I mean, we'll get to who we've played here. We played some good teams, but we also haven't played anyone that's like elite right now. And teams are hitting .293 against him. Now, he's, again, not walking, guys. Got some good strikeout pitches. He's got 14 Ks to 3 walks, so that's good. But he's giving up too many home runs. Guys are hitting the ball way too hard off him right now. And it's kind of been up and down. He's had some good moments out there. He's had some good appearances, but sometimes he just is getting rocked. And I don't love to see that, but we seem to continue to go back to him over and over again. So it looks like he's certainly in our plans coming out of the bullpen. Now, the one guy I really like right now, outside of Zeldin, the guy I think might be our best option out of the pen. Like, I would say, to me, he's got to be our setup guy. Personally, that's what I think of him right now. Tyler McLaughlin, yes, another transfer. This guy is actually from Emory, another big pitcher. 6'3", 230. His ERA right now is at 1.63. Teams are only hitting .069 against him. He's got 5 appearances, only 5 1/3 innings, but I've really liked what I've seen. Now, his control has been the only thing that's concerned me. He does have 8 walks to only 7 strikeouts this year, so that's been a concern at times, but that's the case with pretty much everybody coming out of the pen for the most part outside of Brian Zeldin. But again, like, teams are hitting this guy. Like, they're not even really touching him. So I'm really excited to see what he can do in SEC play. I think he's going to be a really big piece for us coming out of that bullpen. Brant Panzer is another guy, a transfer from Stanford, who I think we had really high hopes for. He hasn't been great to this point. He's got better stuff than what he's shown to this point. Last year for Stanford, he was pretty good. And Wes Johnson keeps talking him up, saying, like, he's coming. Like, we're really high on this guy. He just got off to a little bit of a slow start. But, I mean, right now, his ERA is 6.35. I mean, teams are only hitting .227 against him, so they're not crushing him, but he's also walking some guys, too. I mean, he's pitched 5 2/3 innings, got 4 walks in 5 2/3 innings. 9 strikeouts, that's solid, but he's been giving up a few too many runs for my liking. But again, Wes Johnson, I trust this guy. He knows far more about pitchers than I do, and he seems to be very high on him. He thinks Panther's coming around, so hopefully that is the case. And we have a ton of other options. There's guys that made some spot appearances here and there, but those seem to be the core relievers coming out of the pen for us that I think we're going to lean on starting this weekend in conference play. And look, our pitching as a whole hasn't been great, but it hasn't been bad either. We're pretty much middle of the pack in the SEC for the most part. Our team ERA is a little bit lower than middle of the pack. We're 9th in the SEC with a 3.74 ERA, but that's respectable. That's fine. We're 7th, right exactly middle of the pack in batting average against, with teams hitting .215 against us. We're 7th in hits allowed. We are 14th, though, in home runs allowed. This is what's killing us. These next two stats, this is what's killing us, okay? If anything, I don't want to say it's killing us, but this is what's hurting us. We've given up 23 home runs this year. That's dead last in the SEC. The next closest team in the SEC, in fact, has only given up 17 home runs. So we've given up by far the most home runs in the league. And we've also walked the most batters in the SEC. We've walked 83 guys in 18 games, guys. That's dead last in the SEC. So here's the problem. Here's what's happening to us. We're doing a really good job, for the most part, of getting guys out. Like, teams aren't really, like, especially our starters, teams aren't really hitting for high averages against our starters. And our top relievers are not really hitting them very well either. But we're walking too many guys. And that combination of walking guys, giving out free passes, and then giving up jacks, that's allowing teams to put up runs on us. Look, in college baseball, with these bats, you're going to give up home runs in some of these parks. You're just going to. It's going to happen. But what you want to do is you want to limit the damage. And that's it within your control by not walking guys, okay? If a team hits a solo shot against you, you don't like that. You don't want that to happen. But you can live with that. A solo shot's typically not going to kill you. What's going to kill you is a 3-run shot in one inning. And the next inning, they got a 2-run shot because you walked 3 batters. And all of a sudden, now you're in a 5-run hole. And if we have been that bad walking guys and giving up home runs in our non-conference schedule against the teams that we've played, It is concerning heading to conference play. I have to be real with you guys. That is very concerning because we're going to face far more dangerous lineups in conference play. So we have got to do a better job. If we're going to give up home runs, fine, give up home runs. But don't put the guys on base with free passes. And you know that has to be driving Wes Johnson crazy. It has to be. As a guy who is a pitching coach by trade, and we're walking all these guys, he always preaches, throw strikes, throw strikes, throw strikes. They hit it, but throw strikes. And yet we're not consistently throwing strikes. Now, I will say this. Again, we have thrown a lot of different guys that when we get into conference play are not really going to pitch. Unless like we're just, you know, getting destroyed and we just want to throw some guys out there. Like we've thrown guys like, I mean, Chandler Marsh, who was good for us a couple years ago, but man, he's kind of fallen off. I mean, he's been getting hit really hard. Zach Harris has been getting hit really, really hard. I mean, he's got an 8.53 ERA. Teams are hitting 290 against him right now. He's given up 2 home runs. So I'm hopeful once we really narrow down who we're going to use out of the pen in these bigger games, we'll be okay. But we've got to cut down on the walks. We've got to cut down on the home runs. There's just no getting around that. That has to happen if we want to be as good as we can be, especially with this offense. Now, our offense keeps us in it. Right? That is something that we do have going for us. But you don't want to have to put the pressure on our offense night in, night out once we get into SEC play. You'd like for the pitching staff to actually hold up their end of the deal a little bit more consistently. Now, one more cause for concern for me, and I don't know if I'm making too much of this, but it's been something that's caught my eye the past couple of weeks. It's been a frustration for me, and it is concerning to me. I'm just going to be real with you. Our defense has not been good, guys. We have the third most errors in the SEC right now. We've got 17. Kentucky and Ole Miss have 18, so really, we're right there. Like, we are not playing good defense. Our fielding percentage is fine-ish. We're ninth in the league, but we're only 103rd nationally with a 972 fielding percentage. And the problem with this, guys, is when we make errors like that, it extends innings. There's a couple of games, actually. Like the game that we played against Michigan State, yes, ultimately ended up killing us, but they had a huge inning where we should have been out of the inning. I think they had like 5 or 6 unearned runs in that inning because we made an error, and then they hit a couple home runs, and now they're killing us, and we couldn't come back in the one game that we lost. But when we walk guys like we walk, and then we make the errors that we make, and we get guys on base that shouldn't be on base, and then we give up home runs like we're giving up right now, that is a problem. That is a problem heading into SEC play. Now, again, like the pitching, I'm hopeful that our fielding will be better, our defense will be better in conference play, and here's why. We have a different lineup essentially every single game. And we have guys playing all over the field. Slade Alford's played third base. He's played second base. Charlie Condon has played third base. He's played first base. He's played left field. He's played center field. Sebastian Morillo has played second base, which is where he played all of last year. He's now played third base. We seem to have a different left fielder and right fielder almost every single game. There's really 3 constants we've had as position players. We've had Fernando Gonzalez as our catcher primarily. And Henry Hunter's come in there at times. Logan Jordan's got some games in there as well. I want to say Corey Collins has 1, maybe 2 starts at catcher, but Fernando's going to be our guy when we get in conference play. Like, he'll play 2 out of 3 games at catcher during the weekend, and we'll give probably Henry Hunter a start there as well. But he's been a fixture at catcher for us. Colby Branch has been a fixture at shortstop essentially every game, and Dylan Carter's been our primary center fielder. And that's really the only spot he's played. Then you got guys like Trey Phelps, who's played in the infield. He's played in the outfield. Paul Tates has played first base. He's played second base. He's DH'd. So there has just been a lot of moving pieces, and there's very few players on the team that have like a home. This is their spot where they feel comfortable. And I think when you move guys around like that, it does hurt your defense to a degree because they don't get comfortable in that position. And look, I get why he's doing it. It's non-con play. We haven't played a ton of great teams. You want to see who fits best where. You want to find who are your best 9 and what's the best combination of those guys. I get it. I get what we're doing. You want to give different guys opportunities, and sometimes to get guys onto the field, you got to move guys around. I understand all that, but I also think once we get a conference play, it'd be really nice if we start to hammer down some more consistent positions for guys just from a defensive standpoint. I think that will really give our defense a shot in the arm, and we need that because we do. With the way we walk guys, we do not need to be putting extra guys on base with errors. I'll give you one more number. Listen to this. This is my point, guys. We have allowed 20 unearned runs in 18 games. More than 1 unearned run a game. That is insane, guys. Let me give you some comparison points here. Arkansas, who's number 1 in the nation, they're incredibly good. They have given up 4 earned runs this year. Tennessee, also very good. 5 unearned runs this season. Florida, also very good. 5 unearned runs. We've got 4 times as many unearned runs than those teams. So if we want to be talked about as one of those kind of teams in the SEC, We got to start playing better defense. 20 unearned runs is not going to get it done, guys, especially when we don't have like elite top of the line stars. We have good starters, but we don't have that elite top of the line guy right now. And we cannot make their job more difficult with piss poor defense like we have through the first couple of weekends. And look, we've been okay. We've been fine. We've gotten through because we're 17-1, but we've gotten through because our offense is so good. We haven't played great teams. When we play better teams, again, we got four top 10 teams coming up here, guys, over the next 10 weekends, six top 25 teams. We cannot give them free bases like that. We cannot allow them to extend innings. You will lose games. You will lose series because of that. So yes, let's figure out who needs to play where and just let them play there. I love Wes Johnson. He's done an incredible job. He's infused this energy into our program. He coaches with an edge. I love it. But I also want to see guys kind of just nail down some spots and get comfortable somewhere and not moving around all over the place. And I'm hopeful once we get an SEC play, that will indeed be the case. I'm hopeful. We'll see. We'll see. We'll find out tomorrow. So yeah, there you go. That's our offense, our pitching, our defense. So let's get to the big picture question here, and then I'll get out of here today. Is this Georgia baseball team for real? I've had a number of you out there reach out and ask me this question over the past couple of weeks as we've gotten off to this 17-1 start. And I think it's a very fair question because the reality is we have not played a murderer's row schedule. We have not. Now, we've played some good teams, but we haven't played like elite teams. That's just the reality. But saying that, again, we have played some good teams. Everybody we've played has not been like Northern Colorado. I know last week, if you watched any of that, like it was just like, I felt bad for them, man. I mean, they are terrible. They are 0-16 now. We beat Northern Colorado 55-9 over the course of four games, an average of 14-2. They're a terrible baseball team. Unfortunately, we had to play them because we had a hole in our schedule, and that was the only team that we could get come play us. And that's how we end up with Northern Colorado. Ideally, that would have been a much better baseball team, but that's just, you know, sometimes it was a quirk of the schedule, and it was what it was. So, unfortunately, we played that team, and that's going to kill our strength of schedule. But outside of that, we've played some good teams. UNC Asheville, I know you don't think of them as a power program. They're solid. They're 9-7 right now. They lost to Tennessee 3-2, you know, so they pushed Tennessee, who is a top 10 baseball team right now. But we beat UNC Asheville by a combined 38-7 over that first weekend. We run ruled them twice. So solid baseball team, not elite, but we dominated that team. Northern Kentucky is actually a decent baseball team. They're 8-8 right now, but three of those losses were to us. We swept them. They did go to Columbia, Missouri and take 2 out of 3 from Mizzou. Now, Mizzou's not a very good baseball team, but that's still an SEC program. And they went on the road and took 2 out of 3 from Mizzou. Tech is 12-4. We swept Tech. We technically only get credit for 2 wins there, but Tech freaking sucks. I tell you guys all the time, Tech sucks. And this is case in point. We were leading that game 9-3 on Friday night, and we had batted in the top of the fifth, going into the bottom of the fifth. Tech decided, you know what, we're not going to play anymore. We're going to cancel this game. It's done. Because they knew they weren't going to win, and they knew we weren't going to make that game up. It didn't get through 5 full innings, so the game doesn't count. It's ridiculous. I want to say some words that I can't say on here because we try to keep this a family podcast, but you know what I want to say. Tech sucks. I hate them. They lie and cheat. They are the worst. If I did not like beating them so much, I would just say don't play them again. If they pull that kind of stunt, don't play them again. But I just like to beat them, so let's keep playing them. But Tech is good. They're 12-4. That's a good baseball team, guys, and we swept them. Georgia Southern is a solid baseball team. They're not great, but they're solid. They're 8-8, but hey, they've beat Maryland. They beat Mississippi State 11-4. They played Campbell, who's a top 20 team. And Campbell, I know you don't think, again, Campbell, who's Campbell? That's a good baseball program. They've been a good baseball program for a while now, and they took 1 of 3 from Campbell. They lost a series, but hey, they beat Campbell. It's a top 20 team. Beat Mississippi State 11-4. Beat Maryland. Southern solid, and we beat Southern. Iowa was a preseason top 20 team. Now, they struggled. They are 7-9, but here's the deal with Iowa. It's still a good baseball team, but they thought that they were going to be good. They have a good team, so they scheduled very aggressively. You tend to do that when you think you have a good team coming up. You want to schedule very aggressively so you can raise your strength of schedule and really improve your standing when it comes to NCAA tournament time. So that has come back to hurt them. They've lost a couple of competitive games. They lost competitive games to Auburn and Virginia in a tournament. I think that was the first or second weekend of the season. They lost 2 out of 3 at Ole Miss. And then they came down here on Tuesday and we beat them. So yes, I know when you look at Iowa's record, you say, well, that's not a very good baseball team. They're a good team, guys. I mean, again, that's a team that was thought of highly enough to be a top 20 team in the preseason. I think they were 18 in the preseason, but they have had a very difficult schedule, play a lot of power teams, and They've been competitive in most of those games, but just haven't won enough of them. But still, a good, solid baseball team. Yes, Northern Colorado is terrible. We've already talked about them. So we've played some good teams. Northern Colorado is really the only team that is absolutely dreadful. Everyone else is pretty good. Tech, I think, has a chance to be really good. Everyone else is solid. So when you look at it from that standpoint, and you're trying to project forward, say, okay, who have we played, and will this translate into SEC play? We're not going to run through SEC play like a buzzsaw, guys. Like, we're not going to go, I don't know, we're not going to go 25-5 at SEC play. We're not going to go 23-7 in SEC play. That's not in the cards. We've got 30 SEC games ahead of us over the next 2.5 months. I would say this team right now, with how we hit the baseball, is probably going to be a team that's going to, I would say, if we can get to 18-12 in SEC play, I think that's a really good season for us. In fact, if we get to 18-12 in SEC play, I think we're going to be a national seed. I mean, last year, guys, Tennessee was 16-14 in the SEC, and that was a really good baseball team. Vanderbilt was 19-11. South Carolina was 16-13. LSU, who won the national championship, was 19-10 in SEC play. Arkansas was 20-10. Auburn, good baseball team last year, 17-13. So 18-12 is doing work for us. I think that's probably the ceiling for this team this year. I think maybe more realistic would be 16-14, somewhere around there. If we can get to over 500 in SEC play, get to 16-14, and hold serve in the midweek, like against teams like Clemson, especially. Like, we have a game against Clemson, who's a top 10 team right now. We have another game against Georgia State, game against Georgia Southern, Kennesaw State. If we can win the majority of those games and not lose the teams that we should beat in the midweek, and we get to 16-14 in the SEC on top of starting out 17-1. I think that we're going to have a shot to be a team that hosts a regional, to be a top 16 seed, because that's what you have to be. You have to be a top 16 seed. There's no guarantee there. Obviously, it depends a lot on what happens around the country and how other teams are faring, all of that, yes, of course. But our strength of schedule is going to be really, really strong once we get through SEC play. It might not be there right now, but once we get through SEC play with what we have in front of us in this league, it's going to be a very strong strength of schedule. And again, if we're over 500, I like our chances to host a regional. Now, are we going to be a national seed, a top 8 seed, and host a super regional? Probably not. Not if we are at 16-14. We probably have to get to, I don't know, 18-12, 19-11 to be a national seed, to be in line to host a super regional. And that's pushing it. I mean, that's a reach goal. Not impossible, but I think our pitching is really going to have to elevate if we want to get to that point. I just don't know if that we have the pitching right now to get to that level. With our dominant lineup and what I think is a good pitching staff and some solid options out of the bullpen, I think that we can get to over 500. I think that's very, very reachable. I think that's a very reasonable goal. And it would be great if some of those wins, if we get to 16-14 or 17-13, whatever we end up getting to, if we can get there over 500, if we can get some of those wins against the likes of Tennessee, A&M. Alabama's actually pretty good this year. We get them at home next weekend. Take a series from Florida or Vanderbilt at home. You know, that would be great. If we can get a couple of wins there and take a couple of those series against those top 10, top 20, top 25 teams, then that will really boost our chances. So when trying to determine if this team is quote-unquote for real, I guess it depends on what your definition of for real is. If your definition is being a national seed, being a top 8 seed in line to host a super regional, if we can get by a regional, which we haven't done since 2008, I believe, then I guess I don't think this team is for real, if that is your standard. But if your standard is getting to over 500 in the SEC, winning the majority of your remaining non-conference games, those midweek games, winning your fair share of games against those top teams on your schedule, those top 10, top 5, top 15, top 20 teams, getting back to the postseason, and who knows, maybe even possibly hosting a regional, being a top 16 seed, if that's your standard of being quote-unquote for real, then yeah, I would say this Georgia team is for real, because that's what I think this team is. I would love to sit here and tell you that we're the kind of team that could win the SEC and go like 20-10 or 19-11 in SEC play. Again, I just don't think that we have the pitching for that right now. I don't think we have the top-of-the-line guys right now. I think we have solid options in the starting rotation. I think we have solid options coming out of the bullpen. I just don't think we have like those elite guys that you would typically need to get to 20-10, 19-11 in the SEC and really contend for an SEC crown. I just don't think this team has that. As good as our offense is, which really is one of the best, if not the best, in the entire league right now, I don't think our pitching is going to hold up quite as well once we get into SEC play. That's my concern. But you know what, guys? I can tell you this. It's going to be fun. However it turns out, this team is fun. We're going to fight to the very last out every single game because that's what Wes Johnson demands. He's brought that energy. A lot like Kirby Smart. He's changing the culture within our program, and it's a beautiful thing to see. I love it. It's a lot of fun to watch this team. Again, we're hitting the cover off the baseball. And if our pitching can continue to develop, some of these young guys like Finley and Evans, if they can continue to develop under Wes Johnson, then who knows? Maybe we can make a run for like 17-13, 18-12 in the league. Who knows? Maybe. I think that's certainly still a reach, but we'll see. I'm open to the possibility, and it is going to be a fun season. It's been a while since we've been able to say that. We had a little bit of a run there for a couple years under Scott Strickland, but it's been a minute. But we do open SEC play this weekend on the road in Lexington. We're taking on the Kentucky Wildcats, who are 14-3 right now. Now, that ballpark is interesting. It's kind of newish, and it is a cavernous ballpark. It is a very big park, so I don't know if we're going to hit as many out of the park this weekend as we have been throughout the first couple of weeks. So if we don't, guys, don't freak out and say, oh, well, now in SEC play, the lineups just come back down to earth. Like, maybe that will happen. It's probably going to happen to some degree. But that park is not a good indication of what the rest of the parks that we're going to play in are going to be like. That is a massive ballpark. But hey, it'd be great to start off SEC play with at least a series win, take 2 out of 3 from the Cats. If we can get the sweep, man, like, let's go. This is the kind of series that we need to win, because when you look at our schedule down the road, yeah, we have Alabama next to you. Alabama's a good baseball team, guys. That is a top 15 team. And then shortly after that, we've got Tennessee, who's a top 5 team right now. We've got A&M a little bit later in the season, who's a top 5 team right now. We've got Vanderbilt later in the season after that, who is a top 10 team right now. We've got South Carolina, who I don't think should be ranked right now, but they are a top 20 team. We got Florida, who's still a very good team right now. They're a top 10 team. They almost won the national championship last year. So when we get a team like Kentucky, who's still a good baseball team, Kentucky's good, but that's the kind of team that we need to beat. Like, we need to win this series, because there are going to be some very challenging series later in the schedule that are going to be very difficult to win. Like, we just need to get, like, at least one. Like, when we go to A&M, we need to get at least one when we go play Tennessee. So when we play the Kentuckys of the world, the Mississippi States of the world, the Ole Misses, the Missouris of the world, those are the series that we need to win, because you can't count on winning the other series. So yeah, this is a very important series this weekend. You can catch all the action on SEC Network Plus. I wish it was on linear SEC Network, but it's not going to be. So everyone has streaming now. Well, I shouldn't say everyone. I think most people have streaming now. So if you get a chance, no conference basketball tournament's going on, I'll be watching that a lot, but I'll also be tuning into the baseball team as well. So check them out. Keep following along. And you can follow us on social media to keep up with everything that's going on. You can find us on Twitter at @glory_UGA. You can also find us on Instagram at @GloryUGAPodcast. Also, check out our YouTube channel. We've got some videos up there for you guys. Search for Glory UGA Podcast on YouTube and you'll find our channel. We got a bunch of great content for you. We're going to keep having content for you all the way through spring practice, through the rest of the offseason, in the lead up to the college football season. We'll have some baseball content, some tennis content as well. Ton of great stuff for you. So like the video, subscribe to the channel. I greatly appreciate that. So yeah, that'd be great. But anyway, thank you for being here, guys. I appreciate you. Have a fantastic weekend. Maybe the Dawgs can pull out the impossible, meet Florida tonight. Man, that would suck to lose them 3 times this season, but that's probably what's going to happen. But if we do lose to Florida, when we lose in the SEC tournament, which is going to happen sooner rather than later probably, we will have next week, we will have our season recap, where we'll make sense of everything that happened. We'll talk about Mike White, the future of the program, all of that. That's coming up. We're not done with basketball talk. I just want to see how the SEC tournament plays out. But yeah, anyway, have a great weekend, guys. I'm Tyler, and as always, go Dawgs!